Hi, this is Amanda Blake Davis, and you are listening to Improv Nerd. Listen to Jimmy Crane and I jerk off in magazines.
That's improv, bitch. Improv, bitch.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Crane, and this is another episode of Improv Nerd. And our guest today is Amanda Blake Davis. She can sing, she can act, and she can improvise. She's performed with Baby Wants Candy, the all-women's improv group Virgin Daiquiris at I.O. Chicago, and she's done 5 reviews at the Second City ETC. And before we get to today's episode, I want to say I've been performing improvisation in front of a live audience for over 25 years. And as you know, as you're performing improvisation in front of a live audience, millions of things can go wrong. You can have audience members that are drunk and want to talk back to you when you're performing or yell the same suggestion over and over again because they think they're getting a laugh. Something technical can go wrong, music or lights or, you know, dogs can walk in. I've seen all sorts of crazy stuff happen. But I have never seen this, and that is one of our interns who was sitting in the front row, who was timing out the show, decides during the improv portion with Amanda and myself that he was going to join us. Now, when he got on stage, I got to tell you, my first reaction was fear. Then I got really, really angry. And when I get angry, I just turn it into myself. I don't express it. And so then I shut down. And as you know, improvisation, it works when you're in the moment. And when I'm shut down, I am not in the moment. And it also helps when you're speaking to the moment, which I wasn't doing. We finished the improvisation. And here's where I feel the shame. And here's where I feel the regret. Part of the show, I think part of the charm of the show, or part of the reason the show works, is that after we improvise, we sit down and we talk about what we just did, the choices we made, bad choices. You know, I was intimidated by you. You know, I think I should have said more agreement. You know, I was in my head, stuff like that. I did not bring it up at all, and I will tell you, and I feel bad about it. I feel like I've let you guys down in a lot of ways, and I'll tell you the reason why. The reason why was I was protecting the intern. I felt so much anger. It was really more rage than it was anger, that I didn't want to get angry in front of people at the intern. And I didn't want to start saying, you know, why'd you do that? That was really stupid. You know, I never asked you to do that. I didn't want to embarrass them. And after the show was over, I was still wound up, and I went to the producer, Ben Caprero. And I said, Ben, what are we going to do here? And he goes, well, I think you're going to have to fire him. And I'll be honest, I was afraid to fire him. It didn't seem like it was the right choice at that time. So then we went back in backstage and we confronted him. I don't know if we confronted him. I might have, now that I remember it, I might have kind of pushed it off to Ben. And Ben said something like, you know, why did you do that? And he said, well, I had Amanda as a teacher and Amanda liked me, which to this day, I don't know what that meant. But anyways, I went to group therapy that following Monday because this show was filmed, was recorded on a Friday. And I brought it up with my therapist. And what came out of it was, for me, was that I have a hard time with being the authority, being the leader, being the boss, I guess it is. And I wasn't clear with these interns. And so I decided that I wouldn't fire them. And instead, I went in and I said, you know, this is how I felt. I felt angry when you were on stage. And that this is what I expect from you guys. And one of your duties is not and this is clear, is not to get on stage and improvise. You're supposed to do social media, you're supposed to time out the show, you're supposed to take pictures, but you are not supposed to get up there and improvise. And really, and this might be too psychological for you guys, it probably is too psychological for me, but what I learned from this was that when I asked interns, and we had four interns in this run of the show, four interns, all right? And I kept thinking that, you know what? They're doing me a favor. And after that, I had to look at it differently, that I had to take some responsibility. I had to take a lot of responsibility, and I had to be more assertive with the interns. And it was a really painful lesson, and I have to say that I felt like a total victim. I felt like, oh, I'm being screwed by the intern. But it really was a blessing, and I really learned from it, and I really appreciate it. And the kind of the footnote of this story, which I think is interesting, is that intern did not intern, after that, but he has come to, I would say, he's like one of our biggest fans. And I think he did that because I think he had a newfound respect, hopefully, for me, or at least that's what I'm telling myself. Enough about that. I think that's way too much backstory that you need to know. It feels almost too inside baseball. I think you're really going to like this episode. Amanda Blake Davis talks a lot, some really great stuff. Improvising at Second City, what's it like to do musical improv, and dealing with MS. Enjoy.
They love you, Amanda Blake Davis.
Thank you.
Now, you were a musical theater person.
Yeah, you could say that.
Tell us about the first show you were in.
I was a part of a group called the Peter Pan Players.
Oh, of course, we know
them. In Worcester, Massachusetts, and that was a community theater thing.
Now, how old were you when that was?
Six.
Okay.
Like kindergarten age. Uh-huh. Instead of like going to soccer camp, a lot of people in our community would go to this Peter Pan Players thing. And I think the first show I did was Snoopy, I think, or Really Rosie might be one, that Carole King musical. Remember that?
Yeah.
So there was, but basically this group would do, they would do several musicals a year where like the older kids would have their own specific musicals, but then they'd do one big one where I think we must have done like Joseph like 18 times or Godspell a ton of times, like where, or Barnum or something, where the little kids would do all the like tiny little chorus parts and then the big kids got to do. And I was with that group from six till I graduated high school.
And you said that's the place where you were exposed to improv.
Yes, Can of Squirms.
Okay, tell us about Can of Squirms.
Can of Squirms, Sue Meville, Sue Meville, who ran this theater company.
That was her name?
Yes, yeah, Sue Meville.
Okay.
And Dot Minka. Sue Meville used to talk to her armpit. If we weren't listening, she'd be like, I'm talking to my armpit. And she wore taps on her sneakers. Those are things I remember.
Why would she talk to her armpit?
Because she wanted our attention. Okay. And if we were being unruly, she'd be like, what am I, talking to my armpit? And then she'd talk to her armpit. So Sue Meville, like, she ran this theater company, and I mean, I don't know, I was six, I didn't know what was going on, but she had this canister, it was called the Can of Squirms, where she would just put like different slips of paper in there where it might be a relationship or a scenario or something, and then as a warm up before we ever did any of our like vocal exercises, or well, we stretch, we do the robot. That's very friend of the time.
Go into that. What was
the
that
robot,
story?
We would have to do physical stretches, and like there was this robot thing we would always have to do. Like,
would you, and you put your arms up like,
yeah, and,
like a
yeah.
clothesline, and yeah. that was a warm-up exercise?
That was a warm-up. It was physical
okay.
stretches.
Uh-huh.
You would pull it like to after or before we did like vocal warm-ups and stuff, you'd just like do your improv where it was like two people get up, and you are at a bus stop, and you're a policeman. And then you just had to go. But it was just, as far as I was concerned, it was like, oh, this is just to warm us up and get us.
Well, but that was also something, if you look back, that was like, oh, made you excited about improv?
I hate to admit this. I didn't really know what improv was when I moved here. Like,
to Chicago? What did you know? Like thick crust pizza?
I knew whose
Blue
line.
Blue Man Group?
I knew whose line is it anyway.
Okay.
And I knew that a guy who had come to our college and did a show with us was like, you would love Second City. You have to do Second City. And I was like, great, I don't have a plan. So I said yes and just moved to Chicago.
But you didn't know what improv was?
Not necessarily. I mean, I knew what it was. Like, I could give you a definition of it, but I didn't know that it, I didn't know it existed as an art form. I did not know that, like, there was a theater that all they did was get one suggestion. Like, I didn't know I.O. existed. I didn't know.
So when you took your first class at Second City, mm-hmm. were you just shocked that you're walking around in space?
No, because I love to walk around in space. Here's the thing, is that I was getting paid to do improv before I even took my first class here, because I went to the Reader and I was like, if I moved myself here to do improv, I should probably learn how to do it. So I went to the Reader and I saw an audition at Players Workshop.
Players Workshop at the Second City used to be one of the schools
here.
Yeah,
the audition was at the Athenaeum.
Okay.
Ken Miller was running this company, and they were doing a show called Utterly Improv at the Milk Pail out in Elgin.
Mm-hmm.
And so I auditioned. I auditioned for that show, and I got cast. So I was cast. I would drive out to Elgin on Friday nights with a group of people I don't know what I was doing, but we would do short form games at an all you can eat fish fry. I swear to you, I have a picture somewhere of the marquee that says all you can eat fish fry and improv comedy at the Milk Pail.
And how old were you then?
22.
22. And then when did you start? Because you auditioned for Second City Touring Company for 8 times.
Probably.
8 times.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that rejection?
Poorly. Uh-huh. I cry a lot now, but like I cried, I get very affected by things, very affected, and I would be devastated, and I would leave. It wouldn't take but seconds from me like leaving the room to then be immediately sobbing in a heap, like at Starbucks.
And what would you say to yourself? You'd be like,
I'm the worst. I'm worthless. I don't know why I say I can do this. Or
now, as long as you've been doing this for a long time, does that ever creep back today?
Yeah. Are you kidding?
When does it? It does for me all the time.
It creeped in last week when I'm doing a show that I'm so fucking proud of.
Which is?
It's called Broads on Boards. It's an original musical. Uh-huh. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So proud of it. It is such a labor of love, and we had 2 people in the audience. We did a show. We did an hour-long original musical, full out, left it all on the floor, and to finish up and be like, 2 people saw that, and I was devastated. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
And then at 26 years old, you get diagnosed with MS.
Yes, I do.
And tell me about how you got that news. You were in the touring company then?
No, I had not been. I'm still in desperate times of like not getting anywhere with Second City at that point. So at that time, I'm working at Comedy Sports. I'm doing musical to musical. I'm working with Sirens. I'm doing stuff around town.
Right, but you also have a day job at
Morgan Stanley.
Okay.
I started losing. Oh, that's not funny. I started losing feeling in my limbs.
Okay.
I lost feeling.
Which is not good for an improviser.
No.
You know.
So I lost. There was a time where for 3 months I couldn't feel the left side of my body, or for 3 months I couldn't feel my feet, and then it traveled up to like my legs, and I was like, and doctors kept saying it's a pinched nerve, it will go away, and when it did, I was like, okay, so it was a pinched nerve, and then when it came back. They were like, it's B12 deficiency because you're a vegetarian. And they took blood, and my blood work came back fine. And Dr. Jim, who is he's an eye doctor, but he's a Comedy Sports guy. He works there. I was like joking about it because I could still function. There wasn't any. It wasn't like I'm dragging my leg. It just felt like your limbs are asleep, and it's very tiring. And if you touched, I couldn't feel it. Like if you had touched me, like I wouldn't really. I couldn't register that I was feeling anything, but I still performed all my shows. I still functioned. And when I was talking about it before a Comedy Sports show and sort of joking, I was like, if I fall off the stage because I can't feel my body, you guys, just pick me up, and was being very sort of like flippant about it. And Dr. Jim pulled me aside and was like, you need to see a neurologist right now. Like, I'm going to give you a name of someone and go out to the suburbs. And at that point, I didn't have a car, so I was like, I can't go to the suburbs, sorry. But shortly thereafter, I did end up going to a doctor, and they immediately issued an MRI, and they were like, oh, in a week or two, we'll get back to you with the results, and they called me the next day. So it was one of those things that it was like, no, this is happening.
And you give yourself these injections, right?
That's an overstatement. Yes, every week I've been on medication for 8 years now, and it's an intramuscular injection.
Uh-huh.
I did it myself the first time, and then I have ceased to be able to actually administer the medication myself, so I always have a friend do it for me.
So it's, for you, it's physically hard to do that.
It's absolutely impossible, one would say, for me to put a stabbing thing in my leg. I don't know. Sometimes I think, like, you are bigger than this, and you could do this. And I remember leaving the ETC, and I was like, well, here it is. You live alone. You have no place to go, like, when you do this, so you're going to have to teach yourself. And I psyched myself up, and I was like, going home to do it right now. I sat there for 2 or 3 hours crying over it, eventually put the little cap back on the needle and headed down to Second City and asked Beth Malewski to do it in between her shows at the ETC. Like, that's how, like, it paralyzes me to a point where it's just not worth it. Like, I'd rather just ask a friend to help me out, and everybody is so kind and, like, generous and helpful that, like, it's just better for me to...
What's the prognosis with it?
Yes. It's so different for everybody. And for me, mine is not progressive.
Uh-huh.
And I think they caught it early, and I am on medication, and I have not any attack that I have just feels like, oh, I can't feel my feet again. But it goes away. Like, it's not months. It's like 2 days. And then, my doctor would never even consider that an attack. He's like, no, you'll know when an attack happens. Like, you'll be, you know, losing your balance and not... be able to get
having up. This does it change how you perform, like, oh, I can take more risks, or I'm more careful because I'm afraid I'm going to be sick?
No, it doesn't affect, I don't think it affects me in any way, shape, or form, other than I am super grateful that I'm in this in this position where people make me laugh, and I get to make people laugh for a living, so I'm constantly positive, I think, like, as much as I feel hurt or, like, but I'm surrounded by a positive community, and I think that helps, because one of the big things that Dr. Jim was worried about when I finally got diagnosed, he's like, people go into a very, like, they spiral into a depression when this happens, and it can be very tough, and your life has to change, and this, that, the other thing, and I don't know that... it might have in a different community, and I don't feel like it has for me. Like, I feel like I'm surrounded by really positive people, and I use it to my advantage. Like, to me, it feels like when you are diagnosed with something like that, you feel like, well, fuck, then I have to keep going for myself, and I better do something with my life.
Because as long as I've known you, you've always had this, like, really positive energy to you, and it's true. Was that something that was you had when you were younger, and came from your parents? Where do you think that came from?
A desperate need to please people.
Is that true? Were you?
Exactly.
Were you?
Not a lie. Yeah,
you,
no, that's what that's.
And how did that develop?
I think that's family dynamics for sure.
So were you trying to please, your mother or your father?
Oh God. We had alcohol abuse in our family.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think that there's, if you read any alcohol, books about family dynamics, there is the youngest child of those adult alcoholics, they tend to want to tap dance their way of, like, isn't everything okay? Is everybody all right? I think that had a lot to do with it. It also didn't hurt that, I mean, I was thrust into a theater scene at 6 years old and was mm-hmm. like, this is fun, and just like stuck with it, you know? Well, like, had I never experienced that, had I been at like soccer camp for the next 12 years, I'd probably be...
Well, was it you who wanted to do the theater at 6 years
oh,
old?
Oh, yeah.
Was it,
no,
okay, your parents
I
were
still, and everybody did. Like, I mean, everybody.
Were you like on a theater street or a theater community? Everybody in
everybody,
you?
At one point. Everybody, I think everybody on our block, Carriage Drive behind us, and everybody on South Street, everybody was going to this thing. And then there were like a handful of us that like ended up being like, no, we really like this. Like we want to continue doing this. But yeah, I think it, I don't know. I've never asked my mom, but I assumed it was one of those things where everybody in the neighborhood was like, well, this will be easier for carpooling. If we all get everybody to go like to the same place
right.
over the summer, like... this will be better for everybody involved, and I don't know.
How is your relationship with your parents today?
Oh, great. Really good.
Are they proud of what you...
I cannot say enough of how, like, yes, how proud my mom and my dad and my aunt, Aunt Pam, mm-hmm. who if anybody doesn't know, Aunt Pam, you'll meet her someday. Aunt Pam can boast that she has pretty much seen a show in every place I've been to. Like, I mean, she might have been the first person to see me do theater sports in the back of Philosophers, which is now Uncle Fatty's or something. Like, she came out and saw that show when there were, like, two people. Like, she's come to Vegas. She saw me in ETC. She came out to see them in Main State. Like, she's just... my parent, yeah, everybody is so supportive and really excited. And this, I will say, this legitimized me huge. Like, they were like, improv nerd, you're an improv, like, icon? I was like, I guess so. So thank you.
You're welcome.
For this
you're welcome.
Opportunity.
And you're welcome.
You're helping.
And I'm sure Aunt Pat is listening.
Aunt Pam! Aunt Pam!
But your sister's also very successful
yes.
in the business, too. Casey.
Casey Bradford Davis.
Now, does everybody have three names
yeah.
in your family?
Well, yeah, my aunt is Pamela Blake. My dad is Philip Bradford. Uh-huh. So my sister and I got the Bradford or the Blake.
Okay.
And, yeah, my sister is super successful. She has a published book, The Simplicity Connection.
Uh-huh.
She works as a freelance script editor, script supervisor for America's Got Talent and for, like... you know, a lot of award shows she does stuff for. She's just, and she's insanely driven and, you know, one of the most
independent. So she was like
people.
The overachiever in the family. Like, I'm going
oh,
to...
Well, she, I think we both overachieve.
Uh-huh.
Let's not get it twisted. I work
you,
hard.
You work really hard.
But she was by far, she's way more, I would say she's way smarter than me and way more meticulous about things, like very, very organized and very, where it might take me a little more like time to get to where I'm going. I'm maybe a little more emotional, but she's
was
more,
she like, she was always getting the good grades and you were always
oh
the
no,
entertainer?
We both got good grades?
We
were both like, yes, we were both very like, yeah, we're just different personalities. Though.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know that she'd be the first one to like run up and give you a hug. Whereas I might be the person.
So she's she could be a little cold.
I'm not going to describe her as cold. No.
Okay.
No, she's just different, like different personality wise for
okay.
sure.
Yeah. And then you've won a Jeff Award and she hasn't. Let's
no,
just make
yeah.
sure. Let's
and
make
she
that clear.
Has tried.
Yes.
Yeah, I did win a Jeff Award. That's exciting.
Did it change your life?
That it changed my life.
And for people that are listening to the podcast, the Jeff is on the is equivalent here in Chicago to the Tony.
Say it, yes, the Tonys.
Yeah.
It was that moment was one of the most like beautiful moments in my life, and that there's a picture that somebody took. I mean, I assume the photographer of the evening took. That is by far like it is a picture that should be a successory poster where it just say like dream it and you can achieve it or something. Because it's me in this like I bought a stupid Nicole Miller gown. I mean, I went all out. I went to Korean Sparkle Town and bought like a dollar like diamond cuffs. Like, I mean, these things were a dollar a piece, and I had like, I mean, I dolled myself up for this thing, and knowing that like anytime we've ever been to the Jeffs, nobody wins.
Right? Did you go in thinking you weren't going to win?
Oh yeah,
honestly.
No, I thought for sure there was
okay.
no possible way.
Did you go through like the people that were nominated, and go, they're definitely going to win?
Let's not talk about the fact that there weren't many people nominated. My guess. I think there were two others.
But did you honestly, one out of three, you were saying to yourself, I'm still not going to win this?
Yeah, I was honestly pretty positive that, okay, I was not going to. Mainly because I had been to the Jeff Awards several times when Nikki Lindgren was nominated, when Andy St. Clair was nominated. Like, people were nominated for these things and should have won these things. Mm-hmm. Laura Gray, when she was in, like, I mean, there were people that you're like, these people are pretty great.
Right.
And they don't win. They don't, they come away empty-handed. It's just an excuse to get dolled up and then go drink afterwards. And so I was sort of not, you know, but at the same time, you're also like, but I'm here. We may as well just, like, go for it. And right before they announced the category, I was like, maybe I shouldn't be sitting up in the balcony, just in case. Like, what if, you know, on the off chance. So I was standing at, like, the top of a ramp when it actually happened, and I was like, it was pretty incredible.
Do you remember what you said in your acceptance speech?
I know that I said, I thanked some people, and I was like, are you kidding me? I think I kept saying, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And then I screamed, look at this dress, and ran off. I can't really remember. And I had joked with Mike Dakota, who is our musical director.
Michael, sure.
And I was like, oh, if I win, I'm going to talk for as long as I can and then have them start playing music and then improvise a song to the music. I was like, that would be brilliant, right? When they're trying to push you off the stage and you're like, thank you for this award. I couldn't be happier for it. But at that point, I had, like, it all went out of my head. Like, I didn't remember that. I didn't remember anything. I was just.
And how was your cast when you won? Because that show, like, everybody won. I mean, I think even the wait staff won.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it was just like everybody in.
That's mean.
Okay.
No, they're great, but no, we. It was also Second City's 50th anniversary.
Right.
So, I mean, if we want to go back and look at it, maybe it was a ploy to be like, isn't this great? Second City has been around for 50 years. Let's just throw all the awards their way. But yeah, we...
You don't really believe that.
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I still have the Lucite trophy on my desk, so
okay.
I can.
You think someone's going to repossess it?
I had a dream they did.
Are you kidding? Tell me what was the dream?
I can't remember specifically, but I know that Andrew Alexander called me, and the minute he called me, I was like, "Yeah, I know, I have to give it back." and that was that. The whole point was that I never should have won it in the first place, and that it was time to, like, give it back. And I was like, "I'm getting around to it, Andrew. I'm going to give it back."
That, I wonder
that's
what...
That's an anxiety dream for you.
Yeah, I wonder what that really means.
Well,
so we're going to improvise, okay? Yes, we are going to improvise. We're just going to do one long scene. We talked about it. And then we'll come back and we'll talk some more.
That sounds perfect.
All right? So, Carrie, we're going to improvise. If you bring the lights down, do we want to get a suggestion?
Take a location.
A library.
The library, great.
I took the liberty of getting you a National Geographic pad. I didn't want you to have to walk all the way over there.
Oh, I appreciate that. I really do. That was really nice of you.
I want you to know that I don't like those things of you. Anyway.
I've got 5 more minutes before I have to go back on the floor.
Oh. Well, of course I'll sit down.
Well, let me get you a chair. You know, we're not supposed to be on break at the same time.
Oh, I know.
You could get fired.
I know, and sometimes I think maybe I'm pushing myself to get fired. I don't know. Maybe that's my therapist says sometimes I push the envelope just to see how far I can go.
I'm Casper.
Oh. I got this peasant skirt at Old Navy. I got it there about 10 years ago, but it still fits.
Looks nice on you, Denise.
Thank you, Pat. Look, I'm going to come right out and ask it. You didn't masturbate in the periodical section. I don't even know if it did happen. I don't know that changes anything. I don't know that changes my feelings about you or about what we are. But I wanted to ask you. I just wanted to, maybe I should just know.
Yes, I did. That's why the last couple of weeks I've wanted to close. Because I figured there'd be nobody here.
Yeah.
Do you ever go into that section? When you're alone? And then knowing that you're alone and then just seeing all the covers, you know, Newsweek, Time, Maxim.
Those don't get me off.
Really? Hotter and hotter and hotter.
Oh,
I thought we had that in common. Yes.
What?
Yes.
What earth would have given you that impression?
Because I saw New York Times in your purse.
To the New York
yes.
Times.
Who?
I love crossword puzzles.
Oh, so do I.
Wow.
But you've got to read the newspaper to get the crossword puzzles.
Yeah. And I do. And then I just soak in the news. And I have that information. I don't jack off on it. I'm sorry, that was judgmental.
Yes. I feel like I did something wrong. And I didn't, because I went over our handbook, and I didn't do anything wrong.
Really? I beg to differ, because
okay.
There is a code that says you're not supposed to take your privates out in the library.
Who said I took them out?
this is leading me down a rabbit hole. I don't think I'm Yes, I won't tell anybody. Now I'm curious. I mean, you just...
I take a garbage bag liner.
What?
Oh, gee!
I put it under my pants. So I'm not breaking any rules.
Do you have to make leg holes?
Yes.
When do you get the garbage liner? Do you go before you come to work?
Yes, I come before I go to work. I get a
you take one from home, or you take it from the...
I'm not a thief. I take it from home. I'm wearing one right now. It's not much different than an adult diaper. I would not break any rules here. This job means a lot to me. And so do you. What are they saying? That I'm a perv? I've been called a perv before.
too.
And I liked spending time with you, but I don't know if I'm ready to get involved with somebody who's rubbing up against Newsweek.
I'm not rubbing up against it. I'm getting off on it. It's different.
Alright, I have another question.
Okay.
Do you use any part of your limbs, or are you just somehow spontaneous?
Oh, I really go in your head.
Well,
of course I have to touch it to get it off. It doesn't happen automatically. What do you think? I have a garage door opener and I just pop it.
Language.
I'm sorry.
Language.
I thought we had something special.
Well, we did, and then all of a sudden I got real creeped out. Real creeped out. That stuff's supposed to be done in private. You know, like, that should be stuff that not everybody here knows about. Like, if you and I want to go back to your apartment and, you know, whip out a Field and Stream, then that should be our business.
I would never tell them that's what we did. That's between us.
Right. But now everybody here knows, and I don't know if I could take that. I'm the girl who's seeing the guy
I
gets off in the periodical section. That seems weird.
Denise, I did it because I thought you'd pay more attention to me and think I was cool.
Is your therapist telling you that that's like 4-year-old behavior? Because it kind of is. It's kind of just doing stuff to get any attention at all? I mean, that's bad, bad behavior. You're an adult.
You don't have to make me feel any worse than I already am.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to be
I just know what they say behind my back. Oh, he probably goes home and he lives alone. And he still lives with his mother. And, you know, he takes his bike here. I mean, he's 46 years old. He's a loser. I just wanted to do something that you'd be proud of.
I didn't see any signs. It wasn't like I could go into the periodical section and see, having tagged one of the magazines. I mean, you kept that private. Just in a trash bag in your pants. Tag one of the magazines and then, like, I don't know, signed it or left it in my mailbox or something. But you didn't. You couldn't show me your full self. You left that in your trash bag pants.
Denise.
I'm sorry.
Denise.
I'm sorry. I'm getting emotional.
I know.
I love it when you cry.
It's embarrassing.
No,
it's
not.
Embarrassing.
It's endearing. It's the cutest thing.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't told him really honestly, would I?
No. You have to be proud. Oh,
thank you. Thank you.
I love you, Denise.
What? I don't know if I was in love yet. I was only in love. To see you outside of work. Is that bad to say?
No.
Okay.
I got it.
Oh my God. That's an engagement ring.
Yeah.
That's moving really fast for me. My shift ends in like 5 minutes.
Half time. I mean, you can't keep it. It's my mom's. get you one.
You don't want to give me an engagement.
Yes, I do.
No. You want to find some sweet piece of 46-year-old tail that likes to do the same stuff you do. I'm not who you're looking for.
I do crossword puzzles. I do Sudoku. I play solitaire on a computer. I do the same things you do.
Yeah, but you do them like 100 times more intense than I do. Like, I wouldn't come over here and ask you to marry me. That's like, you took step A and you just like leapt to step Z.
What if I told you I didn't have much time? They say if I don't get it treated, 5, 6, 7 years, it could kill me.
That's still 5, 6, or 7 years.
That's if I don't get it treated. You
so
see,
you get it treated.
I'm not treated. If I don't get it treated, eventually I'll die. And if you don't marry me, or at least my girlfriend, I won't get a treat. Oh, Jesus. Think about that. Thank you for the magazine. Might be the last one I ever read.
It's the new one, though. Specifically brought with a new
That's
name.
Not going to do anything.
Know that now.
Would you do me a favor?
Yeah.
You've got a bit.
I have to shelf like two
I understand.
More books.
Would you speak at my funeral? I'm not close to anybody here. I don't have any friends. I don't want my mom to speak. She's just going to be angry. I would like you to tell everybody how great a person I was and how fun I was to work with and how I impacted so many people here.
I'm going to be as honest as I can. I feel like once you're gone, you have a duty to honor that person's life in whatever way they lived. If you're okay with that.
I'm totally okay with that.
You're not going to kill yourself here tonight, are you?
Yeah. I don't want you to worry about it. You're not responsible. You rejecting me had nothing to me wanting to kill myself. I thought about it this morning.
I have to tell Lyle now, and he's going to have to come up here, and he's going to have to do his library security
thing, which is
probably going to be like take you out in handcuffs.
I understand. By the time you get Lyle, I'm going to be dead. I got a gun on me right now.
Your pants are so tight, I know you don't have a gun on
Excuse me. I've been studying off in the corner since you're having a very intimate conversation.
I'm sorry, were we too loud for you?
I'm just going to go back then, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Sam, you have a little cancer right there.
Don't kill yourself, please.
How does he know about it already?
Obviously, to hear us, we haven't exactly been discreet. Pat.
I love you.
No. Don't. I mean, I liked you and I thought this was kind of entertaining. And then I dove right in and...
So you thought I was into recovery? Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, great.
But in a good way?
Yeah. Just like everybody else, you're just making fun of me.
No,
go ahead, have your laughs. Tell everybody that I'm going to commit suicide, that I jack off the National Geographic. Go ahead, go. I don't want to hold you up.
No, you don't jack off the National Geographic. You jack off to Newsweek. That's who you are.
Improv. Improv.
All right. What did you think of that?
It was real fun. It's so, I mean, no pun intended, masturbatory to do a long two-person scene like that.
What's masturbatory about it?
I don't know, because...
You don't get a chance to do it?
Not often, I don't feel like.
You know, at the beginning, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, quick, we'll be funny. And then I thought, we got 15 or 20 minutes. There's no rush.
Yeah, you may do this all the time, but...
I don't do this. Every week is different.
I think... Yeah, I've only done maybe one or two shows ever in my life where it's only been me and somebody else. Like, Tim Baltz and I did a show at I.O. one night because nobody else could show up for, I don't know what it was called, the scene or something.
Uh-huh.
And it was just he and I doing a full show. And it was so cool. And Jim Carlson and I played together.
But those are really good players that could, they can play any speed. And Carlson and Baltz can, and you can all go slow because you're not going to be edited. That's the brilliant thing. It is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. So at the beginning, it took me a while to settle in. Like, okay, we've got time here, you know? And I just kind of used your character and your attitude and said, okay, I'm going to play low status, which is very easy for me to do. Do you like to play low or high status?
I don't know. I think I like to play both. I can't gauge what I do more often than not anymore. Like, I don't
now, do you ever feel like you need to play ugly to be taken seriously?
No. I think I like to play ugly. I mean, I think that's fun.
Do you think of yourself, do you play ugly because you, how do you perceive yourself?
Passable at best.
So you don't see yourself as very attractive?
Because
in the scene, I'm like, you're very, very attractive.
Oh, no, do I think I'm an attractive human being? Yes. Do I think of myself as attractive on stage? No. Like,
okay.
I don't.
But does that go all the way back to being a kid, like you didn't feel like you were attractive as a kid? Because that's where mine comes from.
I guess there's some latent stuff like where you grow up feeling like, oh, well, like I'm fun and I have personality, but I'm not the person like guys go for. Like I think that still, like there's part of that still sticks. But, you know, I mean.
Did in the five shows you did here, did you ever play like the ingenue or the real sexy?
Yeah.
How was that?
Oh, I love that, too. I mean, I'm...
Which is easier for you to play?
Ooh. I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're equally as fun and entertaining. Like, in that Sex, Love, and the Second City show, I mean, the character is essentially a sort of a nerdy person who's, like, freakish and can't, like, you know, go through the entire database of people and can't find one date like to go on a second date with her. And that's a whole lot of fun, and I don't know, I think is a part of me, but I also like am the person who, you know, is the torch song singer on the piano in Noir, and like I don't know, I think I'm all those things.
All right, let's ask the audience. They probably have some questions for you about either what we did or about you. So if we could turn the lights on, great, Carrie. Thank you. Questions for Amanda Blake Davis? Yes.
Please, Deji. If you could make the jump to film and television, would you do it, or are you addicted to stage?
I am very addicted to stage, but I would say my dream come true would be to get to a point where I'm doing so many movies or doing so much television that on my off season, they're just asking me to go to Broadway to do do shows. It's very Michelle Williams of me. And but I think that I am absolutely, I never want to stop performing live. I love that aspect of it. But there is something very is it timeless the word I'm looking for? Like the fact that like we do improv shows or we do a stage show and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. It's over. Whereas if you make a film or you do something, that's there forever. And like there's something very, very cool and satisfying and exciting about that side of things.
Now, you know, to do film and television, you have a better chance if you go out to L.A. And
you?
Yes, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard. You have a ton of friends out there.
Mm-hmm.
What prevents you from going out there?
Nothing prevents me from going out there, aside from myself.
Is it fear? Like, for me, people will ask, and I'm just terrified of the place.
Truthfully, for a long time, it was that I didn't care for it.
Uh-huh.
I don't...
The lifestyle, the culture?
Yeah, I don't care for L.A. as a place. Like, okay. I have not driven in my... I have a license, and I know how to drive, but I don't have to have a car here. I can walk everywhere I go. I have a community of people that I can interact with anywhere I go. Like, this lifestyle, this community, Chicago in general, made me very happy. And so to me, it was like, why would I go to LA where like everybody lives like 45 minutes from each other? They have to drive everywhere. It doesn't seem like all you're doing all day is just like, it didn't seem appealing to me. And if anything, New York would have been a more solid fit. But I think I'm ready for a move of some kind now. So
another question for Amanda Blake Davis. Yes.
Think about what you and your characters.
Oh,
I see different ones like almost every time I see you perform. And I was just wondering, are there characters like in your brain that are kind of like go-to characters for you?
I don't know. I would love to say yes, because that would make every time you get called into an audition where you're supposed to have five characters at the ready real easy. But I don't. I feel like every time that's like, oh, do some characters. It's like, I don't have character. I don't know how I do that. Like, I feel like there's something weird about improvising that we do sort of like just do it and then it's gone. So I don't think about it much.
Do you come from, like, because when I started at the I.O. and you did Harold's, and if you repeated the same character, that was like the worst thing you could, you were cheating.
Yeah, you're cheating.
Do you have that in your,
I think there's something like that, yes, absolutely, that you feel like you're cheating if you repeat something or if you do a bit two times over, whereas like here, like you're supposed to, like, I mean, or I'm
here,
sorry,
meaning,
like,
meaning
here
Second
at Second City.
City,
like part of, like, I mean, part of the job here is doing the same show over and over again. So making sure you're honing that and making that like your own and finding new ways to do it. Or if you are on Saturday Night Live, they expect you to do that. That character better be pretty big, and you better be able to do it over and over and over again. So it's weird. Like, I feel like that's a real weird push and pull.
Yeah. Another question for Amanda. Yes.
When you started that scene earlier, why did you think that you were so much hotter than he was?
Why did I think I was? Yeah, Jimmy. Why did I think I was so much hotter than you? Didn't. I thought I was a nerdy. I thought I was nebbish. Like,
I thought we were too low status.
Yeah,
characters.
I thought.
What
I was
did
really,
you get from
are
it?
Are you kidding? I don't know if that's true or not.
You thought...
You progressively got sexier.
Are you talking to me or
me
to Jimmy?
Amanda.
Well. Is it the white button down? Is that...
No, I... You know what? I got to tell you something. Doing the scene, I kept going, we got closer and, you know, I just felt more and more... I'm like, she's really, really pretty. She's hot. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, I did make a change during the scene where, yeah, I guess my character no longer was intrigued by you jizzing in magazines. Like,
right.
I think at the start of it, Yeah. Right. And in my head, I picture like a staff of people that are like, go talk to him. Go do it. Like, mm-hmm. you're the one who always talks to him on his breaks. Like, you go ask him if he really jerked off in the magazine section. So that was the backstory for me. Okay. So I was like, oh, yeah, I probably have a group of people that is waiting for me to come. Like, they're waiting, and they can't wait for me to come back and be like, oh, my God, you guys. You mm-hmm. know what he does? He wears trash bags under his pants, you know, which was really sad and painful.
Right.
That I was going to betray you. I really was. Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was about to run back and like tell everybody.
And I just, you know, the trash bag thing came to me. It was like, I'm just going to agree. You know, you don't touch a thing. So I was just trying to justify.
And you've done it before.
Well, a couple.
And you know that tactic.
Yes, I know how that works. So yeah, I was just drawing from my own life. But not in the library. I've done it at home, or I've done it in, you know, Target or something like that. But I felt the engagement ring giving you that, and mm-hmm. you played it really well. And that this is a sign of a good improviser. Where I almost felt like it was like, to me, that choice. I wish I wouldn't have made that choice. It seemed really cliche.
I mean, in improv, everything's been done before, right?
Right.
So we might as well just do things and not.
But that's my like going home, going, I'm going to kill myself. I made that bad choice. Why did I do that? You know?
Oh, okay.
I really do.
I don't think you should.
Kill myself?
Yeah.
Okay, great. What would Aunt Pam think if she's listening?
Aunt Pam would probably.
Would she laugh or would she think?
Oh, yeah, she would laugh.
Does she like the dark humor?
I think she gets a kick out of it sometimes.
What is your dark side? Can I just ask? Do you like get drunk at home and with the lights out? Is there a dark side to Amanda Blake Davis?
Yeah, I can keep the lights on.
Okay.
I don't know that it's dark, but like I don't know that there's anybody who isn't in this business who doesn't have like who isn't all the time conflicted with like I've made this choice, I stay with it, I want to do this for the rest of my life, and what the hell have I done? Like that's dark. I mean, I feel like that's.
Do you compare yourself to other people?
I try not to.
Okay.
I've had this, like, last week was a real tough week, and I feel like I was...
What was tough about it?
I had a lot of things, like, shows that I was really proud of that just weren't, you know, nobody's coming to see, and I just don't know what I'm doing with my life, and I make no money, and how do you pay your bills, and how... Ooh, that stuff.
Yeah. That's pleasant. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, just the reality of this is that... And so many people are, like, all those TED Talks... Mm-hmm. Those TED Talks that like talk about like finding your passion and finding your dream and really like, you know, when you find it, it all works out. No, it doesn't. I've been living my fucking dream for the last like 12 years, and you know what? It's still fucking hard. Every day is hard, and every day you have to worry about like, you know, how am I paying thousands of dollars off on medication that I pay? You know, like shit like that, where it's not. It's hard. This is hard to. And I love it, so I don't want to, but, like, that's the dichotomy is, like, ah, it's fucking hard. I wouldn't do anything else, so do I just complain about it? So what I do is I'll have crying jags, like, I'll cry about it, and then the next day I wake up and I'm like, must be proactive, and then do, like, 100 things that are, like, proactive towards doing it. So it's always good.
How hard of it was it to quit ETC?
Oh, so hard.
Because you had done 5 shows.
Yeah.
And how do you know? Because so many people that I know that eventually leave Second City of Dunsage, they leave bitter, or they're so angry, or they're, you know, they've stayed too long. How did you know it was time to go?
I don't think I did, and that was probably why it was.
Did you get bitter?
No, I loved. I wish that this place was a place that you could stay forever.
Uh-huh.
I really do, and it just isn't. You know, Joyce Sloan said one time that they don't pay you well here because you're not supposed to stay. Like, you're supposed to cut your teeth here and then go and do better things. And not better things, but, like, do more things. And I just love this so much that I would have stayed forever if they had let me. And I think that there was just a lot going on in my life that I was like, I've done 5, the winning the Jeff and like going out on the 50th was like, I couldn't have asked for anything more. So to me, it was like, leave on a high note, say you're, you know, like you're done. And then 7 months later, I was back on the
Now I'm going to answer your question. And my girlfriend, Lauren, soon to be my wife, said, oh, that's too negative. But was there any disappointment, too negative a question. Is there any point where you're like, because everyone's goal is to be on main stage. Was there any point like, why don't they ask me to be on main stage? Or if I hang around, they're going to, was there any?
Oh, sure. I mean, absolutely. I don't think you can ever, if you're in this building, I don't think you ever stop thinking about like, oh, why not me? Or I got the opportunity, though, when Shelley Gossman was hired for SNL. I took over for her for 7 or 8 months on the main stage, and I had the most wonderful experience because I had all of the fun of the schedule and working with brilliant people and all the sort of fanfare that comes with being on the main stage without having to have done the process and get bitter and angry about that show. So I had the best of all possible worlds with it, and I got lucky in that.
And you're doing so much stuff now. You're directing, you're teaching, you're doing Baby Wants Candy, so you're doing musical, you're doing Virgin Daiquiris, you're improvising. What's the thing that you really love to do right now?
I think find something that is new and be able to take it all the way to where it is. I don't know if that makes sense. Be a part of something on the ground floor that really turns out to be something wonderful. And I'm very thankful that like the two shows that I directed right now, I feel like are absolutely things that the people who put them together and the people who are working on them were so passionate about them, and I was happy to be like sort of like the thing that was able to like help it become what it is. Like I'm really jazzed about that, and I'm super proud of like Broads on Board. So I don't know. I guess
I'm gonna squeeze one more question in because we got to go. When you started musical improv, it was just the beginning of musical improv.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and it's now become a genre. What has made it so popular? Because when I started, there was no such thing in musical improv.
Well, partially, people get really good at it. Go see Best Musical at 773. It's a Porchlight Music Theater
which you just
production.
Directed. Got a great review.
It's spectacular. It is Matthew Lorne Cohen, who is the musical director, is brilliant, and he takes things to another level, and these performers are brilliant improvisers and musical theater people. I think people got really good at it. I mean, when it first starts, like, nobody knows exactly what we're doing. We're just testing things out. Now there are people who are just extremely skilled at it, so it's brought it to a whole nother level. And
next week I have Baby Wants Candy. What advice would you give me?
You have it? What does that mean?
It's a disease. No, it's...
you're playing it?
Baby Wants Candy is going to be guest here next
what?
Week.
What?
Yes.
Can I come back?
Yes, you can come back. Yes, if you'd like to come back, you can come
it.
Back. They are going to be here. So what did... I have to
oh,
play
so you're
with
gonna
them.
Play with them. Oh.
They're
going
to bring a musical. What advice would you give me?
Don't worry about rhyming.
Okay.
Sorry. I said it. It's song. The only reason you bust into song in anything is because you're emotionally driven to do so. So
what play, if you don't have any emotions like
then
I do?
You, then musical improv is not for you.
I just work on my emotions issues.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, be emotionally driven to anything to song and then have fun.
And they sell it. They're not even good singers. Yeah. Some of them aren't. When I seen it, but they can sell it.
Yeah, man.
It's such agreement. It's a great group. I'm really looking forward to it. That's next week's show, Baby Wants Candy. Amanda Blake Davis, thank you so much for being here.
That was so great.
There you have it, another episode of Improv Nerd. And I want to thank our guest, Amanda Blake Davis. And I'd also like to thank the good people here at the Second City, Chicago, and as always, my producer, Ben Caprero. You probably figured it out by now, but we are now on feralaudio.com, and we couldn't be happier. So check out the other great podcasts they have there on feralaudio.com, like Brody Stevens, Steve Agee, Matt Dwyer, Chelsea Peretti. The names go on and on. Brainwarp, The Baby Eater. It's a wonderful lineup. And if you get a chance, hit that donation button because 80%, this is true,
80% of that money goes right back to the artist's pocket. You're not going to find that anywhere in corporate America. If you want to know more about me, that's me, Jimmy Corain, of course, you can go to jimmycorain.com and check out my award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy. Also, my improv blog, and I've just put a wonderful blog up there about when you have a bad show, it still sucks, and it still does suck, and I want to kill myself after a bad show. I go in more detail in that blog, so check that out. And please, please, if you get a chance, like the Improv Nerd Facebook page. It really helps my low self-esteem. And as always, I want to thank you guys for listening and all the great response you've been sending me, emails and Facebook messages and stuff like that. I really appreciate it. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run. Improv.
Hello. I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. He's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Patocki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a
rich. I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My